Lots of issues relating to vision impairment out there these days. Dr. Michael Ipp, our guest today, to talk about it and talk about some of the research that's going on. Dr. Ipp is an associate professor of ophthalmology at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and chairs a study of the treatment of central and branch vein occlusions. I want to talk with him about that. And there are a lot of issues. Macular degeneration has been in the news a lot recently, and we certainly want to talk with him about that as well. And you may have some questions of your own, and if you do, we hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call, and we'll be happy to get you on the air. Dr. Michael Ipp, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you, Larry. Glad to be here.
Last time on, you were talking about the SCORE study that you had, and maybe you could explain that study again and talk about what's happened since your last visit.
Correct. Last time we talked about the SCORE study, which stands for the Standard Care versus Corticosteroid for Retinal Vein Occlusion Study. And as we talked about last time, this is a major initiative put on by the National Eye Institute, which is one of the branches of the national government. And it is looking at a novel treatment for a condition called central retinal vein occlusion and branch retinal vein occlusion. And we're comparing this new corticosteroid treatment versus standard laser therapy for these blinding conditions. And we talked at great length last time about retinal vein occlusion and the causes of it and all of the different treatment modalities that are being looked at that condition. And since then, we've recruited a number of patients into the trial. We're at about 500 patients in the SCORE study at this point and looking to get several hundred more. And our plan is to recruit over the next 1 year, finish the study up, and then get study results hopefully within a year or two so that we can disseminate the knowledge that we've gained to the general public.
And for people who would be sort of eligible to participate in this study?
Yeah, this is any patient who has a central retinal vein or a branch retinal vein occlusion. The duration of the disease can't exceed 2 years. So we're looking for patients with relatively recent onset of this disease. And a lot of people have central retinal vein and branch retinal vein occlusions, but the suggestion would be to get to see an eye doctor to make sure that you meet all the eligibility criteria before you come in for a screening evaluation. And this is a study that's being done at 80 clinical centers throughout the United States, and the University of Wisconsin happens to be one of the centers that's still recruiting for this trial.
Okay. So that's a little about the SCORE study. What about macular degeneration? Let's talk about that. That's gotten a lot of coverage in the news lately.
Correct, Larry. This is a disease that, as you mentioned, has really generated a lot of interest over the last several years, particularly over the last year. Now, we've talked about the central retinal vein and branch retinal vein occlusion disease the last time, and that is also a common disease. But age-related macular degeneration, by far and away, is a much more common disease. As a matter of fact, it's the leading cause of blindness in the United States in the age population of 65 years or older. And the prevalence data show that about 1.2 million Americans at any given time has the wet form of macular degeneration. And the data also show that about 5 million Americans have the dry form of macular degeneration at any given time. And if these numbers don't seem high enough, it's sobering to know that the data show that there's going to be a 50% rise in the population that's older than 65 by the year 2020. So if we think we have a problem now, it's only going to get worse, Larry.
Yeah, all the baby boomers coming on board and into that age range. Well, wet and dry. Talk a little about what that means.
Yes, very, very good question. There are essentially two forms of age-related macular degeneration. In the dry form, a patient starts to get aging spots in the eye, and the aging spots, in and of themselves, don't cause a significant amount of vision loss. Although in some cases, it can. However, a patient who has the dry form of macular degeneration can start to become wet. In other words, they can start to develop blood vessels underneath the retina. These blood vessels can leak blood and fluid underneath the retina. And then the patient can begin to lose vision very, very rapidly. And even though the wet form of macular degeneration is not as common as the dry form, the wet form of macular degeneration accounts for approximately 90% of all the severe vision loss in patients who have age-related macular degeneration.
Why? Well, let's take some calls again. If you want to join in with a question as we talk with Dr. Michael Ipp, Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, feel free to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Joel in La Crosse will give you a chance. Hi, Joel. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your program, and thanks for doing the program, Doctor. My son was just diagnosed with a form of dyslexia that they called it the visual dyslexia, and I'm having a little problem getting my mind around exactly what that might be, and I thought maybe you could shed some light on it for me.
Okay, well, that may be, it doesn't really relate to the person's vision per se, does it, Dr. M?
Joel, it's very hard to be certain exactly what you're talking about. It may be something, it sounds like it's something not related to the condition that we're talking about, but regardless, I have a hard time putting a handle on the exact problem that your son really has without any further medical information.
See, they explained that there's an audio type, which is the most common type of dyslexia.
Yeah.
And the information is taken in by the eye, and then it becomes confused during the audio processing of that information. But his form is more visual, and I just, you know, I thought, well, perhaps you might know a little bit more about
it. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a difficult problem, but probably the best thing to do would be to just really speak directly with your son's physician to really get a handle of what the problem is.
Yeah, I'm sorry we can't help you out more on that, Joel, but appreciate your call. And you might even go online to Dyslexia and take a look at what's available online as well. I'm sorry we can't be more helpful. Fred in Clintonville, it's your turn next. Hi, Fred.
Hi. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with macular degeneration.
Yes.
I was told that I have a blockage where the blood, more blood wants to go in, and not enough wants to go out of the eye. Does that sound?
Yeah, you know, you might have two conditions. You may actually have the macular degeneration as you mentioned, but the second problem you're talking about blood flow actually sounds like the condition that we briefly mentioned just a moment ago on today's show, and we had a full discussion on this the last time here, and that sounds like it may be something called a central retinal vein occlusion, where you have a blockage of one of the major veins in the retina, and fluid builds up and gets caught up in the retina, and then you have vision loss. So you might actually be a candidate for the SCORE study. You never know. So I would probably go back to your physician, ask him if this is a condition that you have, which is called a retinal vein occlusion. And if it is, this might be something that's amenable to being studied within the context of a clinical trial.
I've been seeing Wisconsin Retina Associates, mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whatever. There's one in Appleton and one in Green Bay and one in Dena, I think. Anyways, they said there's nothing that can be done about it.
Yeah.
Except keep my blood pressure and my cholesterol intact.
Down.
And stop smoking.
Yeah. That's that would probably be good for a number of reasons anyway, Fred. But so he might be a candidate. Is there a phone number to call that he could call to check on this or not?
There's a general line. You could look it up on the in the phone books. It's just a University of Wisconsin Wisconsin Eye Clinic. I don't want to give this out over the airways because we just don't have enough person power to handle the incoming call information.
Okay, all right. Good luck, Fred. Thank you very much, Hector and Racine. It's your turn. Hi, Hector.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Okay, my question is, I'm going to be 67 in a few months. I developed a macular degeneration on one eye about 25 years ago. It started like in the center of the eye. It was like looking through a dirty window, so I don't get a real. I can see to the side very clear, but in the center of the eye, I get this hazy for like, you know, like a circle for you. It's like looking through a dirty window. You can't make it out what it is. But I've had it for about 25 years. It's never gotten any worse. I was wondering whether, if you, because I only have it in one eye, and I was just wondering whether it, you know, that'll transfer to the other eye. But I've had this for 25 years, and I got almost 20/20 on one eye. So I heard that when I did go see the doctor for it, and they said, well, there's a wet and there's a dry. For one of them, they use laser. For the one you got, laser won't do any good. There's no treatment for it. But you can take, like, some kind of a nutrition that might help it.
You know, you're leading me into segueing into a very interesting aspect of age-related macular degeneration. Now, first, to answer your question directly, and then I'll take that segue. The answer to your question directly is that, yes, in some cases, age-related macular degeneration can occur in just one eye, and then it could take many, many years for it to affect the other eye. It may never even affect the other eye. Some patients come in with bilateral involvement. In other words, they have disease activity in both eyes at the same time. But you bring up an interesting point of nutritional supplementation, and here's what I want to discuss now at this point, that there are some major new initiatives in nutritional supplementation for age-related macular degeneration. There's very important and interesting information on the treatment of wet macular degeneration. So I think we can think of it this way, that we're attacking age-related macular degeneration on both fronts. As we mentioned in the beginning of the program here today, there's a dry form of macular degeneration and a wet form of macular degeneration. In the dry form, there are no blood vessels. In the wet form, there are blood vessels that are growing and are leaking and bleeding into the retina. Now, when it comes to the dry form of macular degeneration, What have we done in the past, and where are we going with this now? Well, with the dry form of macular degeneration, at this point, it's mainly nutritional supplementation that's proven to be effective. Now, this National Eye Institute that I mentioned to you was sponsoring the SCORE study looking at retinal vein occlusions. That's also sponsored something called the Age-Related Eye Disease Study, or the ARED study. And some of you out there may have heard about this already. The results were disseminated in 2001, and essentially what the age-related eye disease study did was to prove pretty much without a shadow of a doubt that certain nutritional supplements are effective at preventing patients who have dry macular degeneration from developing the wet form of macular degeneration, which is very important. And what it showed was that patients who take a supplement containing vitamin C, 500 milligrams a day, vitamin E, 400 international units, beta-carotene, 15 milligrams, 80 milligrams of zinc, and 2 milligrams of copper. It has a very highly protective effect, reducing your risk by about 25%. So ophthalmologists and patients have greatly benefited from a study such as this, which really proves that certain vitamin supplements can be very helpful at preventing the development of wet macular degeneration. And what the National Eye Institute is doing right now is following up that AREDS study with something called AREDS 2. And the AREDS 2 is trying to answer some of the questions that were left unanswered by the first AREDS study. And as you can imagine, there are so many questions about nutritional supplementation that you can't answer all of the questions all at the same time, and you have to take a staggered approach to this. And what the AREDS 2 currently is doing is evaluating whether or not the original AREDS supplements can have a protective effect without the use of beta-carotene, because it's been shown that beta-carotene may not be good for some people, particularly those people who smoke. The AREDS 2 study is also trying to evaluate if we can reduce the amounts of zinc that were seen in the original AREDS formulation. Again, it was 80 milligrams of zinc in the original formulation, and that might be a little too high for some people. And additionally, the AREDS 2 is evaluating whether or not there's an additional benefit if patients take lutein, and if there's an additional benefit if patients take omega-3 fish oils. And these are questions that come up every day as I see patients in my clinic, and certainly as other retina specialists see their own patients every single day. These are very common questions.
And these, it sounds like, now I didn't write them all down, but I was thinking in terms of a sort of a daily multivitamin. Many of those are included, or usually or typically included in a multivitamin.
Yeah, that's a great question, Larry. The question is whether or not, you know, if you're already taking a multivitamin daily, such as, for example, Centrum or Centrum Silver, should you continue to take that, or should you take these in lieu of the other supplement that you're taking? And the best evidence that we have to date would be to continue the multivitamin that you're already on, and if your doctor recommends it, take this AREDS formulation. So you can take them both because the normal, the usual daily supplements such as Centrum don't really contain very high doses of these vitamins.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Hector, for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Michael Ipp, our guest today, Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Dr. Michael Ipp today about some of the research and work going on in the area of vision impairment. And Dr. Ipp, let's talk a little bit more about wet macular degeneration. I know there's a lot of research and work going on in that particular area.
That's correct, Larry. We've talked a great deal about the dry form right here, and I hope it's impressed upon everybody here that we're really making efforts at trying to prevent the wet form of macular degeneration from occurring in the first place. And before I speak about the a little bit about what's going on in the wet form, I just want to remind everybody out there that the University of Wisconsin happens to be one of the clinical sites that's recruiting for the AREDS. To study. We have a number of staff that are dedicated to trying to help enroll patients into what I consider a very important and I think a very pivotal trial in the future. Certainly the AREDS one, the first AREDS study, was quite pivotal and really has made a major impact on how we manage and how we treat age-related macular degeneration patients. And I think the AREDS 2 is going to do the same. So University of Wisconsin is very happy to be a part of that. And one other thing I should mention that's unique about the University of Wisconsin is that, again, the Fundus Photograph Reading Center is serving as a central, I think for lack of a better term, a central laboratory for analyzing a lot of the results from the AREDS 2 trial, just as we did for the AREDS 1 trial. And we have a staff of over 100 people in Research Park here at the University of Wisconsin who are working very hard and are making a major contribution in the field of age-related macular degeneration in general, as well as in the AREDS 1 and the AREDS 2 trial. Now, going on with the wet macular degeneration, Larry, as I was saying, there's a lot of research going on in wet macular degeneration, and just over the last 1 year, the treatment paradigm for age-related macular degeneration has shifted dramatically. And just to provide some background, in the past, we were using hot laser or laser photocoagulation. And what that did was essentially to coagulate or fry up the abnormal blood vessels in the retina. And, of course, that killed off the blood vessels and it prevented the blood vessels from growing any further. But the problem with that, Larry, is that you have a lot of collateral damage. You also damage the normal overlying retina, and patients would experience an immediate loss of vision following the laser treatment. And doctors had a hard time explaining to the patient, well, we're doing this for your own good because you're better off if you get this treatment. You're going to see better off in 5 years if you get this laser treatment than if you don't. So it's kind of a hard sell. And then our treatment paradigm shifted a couple of years back when we came up with something called the cold laser. And in a cold laser, what we did was we injected a medication intravenously into a patient's vein, for example, in the arm. The medication would then travel to the abnormal blood vessel, and then we'd put a very low-intensity light beam over the blood vessel, and the combination of a low-intensity light beam and the medication that was sequestered in the abnormal blood vessel would cause the blood vessel to shrink and die off and preserve the overlying retina. So in other words, less collateral damage than we had with the hot laser. But as I said, the treatment paradigm has really shifted over the last 1 year, and it's incredible how quickly it's changed. What ophthalmologists are doing now is that we're injecting medications directly into the eye. One of the first drugs that came out for injection into the eye was something called Macugen, and it worked reasonably well, and it had some success, but it was quickly supplanted by second-generation drugs that were much more efficacious than Macugen. And I would say that these new drugs are really the treatment of choice for most of the patients who present with wet age-related macular degeneration. Mm. Now, if you give me some time, there's a very interesting story about these two drugs that are out there for wet macular degeneration. So if a patient, anybody who's listening, you may go to your eye doctor and you may hear one of two different things. You may hear from your doctor that I recommend something called Avastin, or you may hear from your doctor that I recommend something called Lucentis. And what you should know about this is that it's quite a long story. Lucentis right now is FDA approved for the treatment of wet age-related macular degeneration, and typically a patient will get Lucentis once a month for an undetermined period of time. So it may be up to a year, it may be 6 months, it may be up to 2 years. It depends on the patient. And again, it's FDA approved for the treatment of wet macular degeneration. Mm-hmm. In the time frame it took to get Lucentis FDA approved, ophthalmologists had discovered that a related drug called Avastin can be injected into the eye and give very similar results.
Huh.
And interestingly, the Avastin is not FDA approved. The Avastin is FDA approved for intravenous use in patients who have colorectal cancer. Okay, so what you have to remember is that patients who get cancers, who get tumors, the tumors have require a blood supply to grow. And the researchers at this company who came up with Avastin developed Avastin to combat growing blood vessels in the body so that when the blood vessels got choked off by the Avastin, the tumors would die. Well, ophthalmologists found that by injecting a small amount of Avastin into an eye, it did the same thing in the eye. It killed blood vessels. And a blood vessel killer is something that's very effective for treating age-related macular degeneration. So we have this interesting situation where, on the one hand, we have an FDA-approved product for the treatment of wet age-related macular degeneration, and we've discovered something that looks just as efficacious, perhaps, as the Lucentis, and it's not FDA-approved. And you may ask, well, then why aren't people using, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the Lucentis, the molecule that's FDA-approved? Well, some of the reason has to do with cost. Some of the reason has to do with frequency of treatment. The cost for a Lucentis injection is somewhere in the range of about many thousands of dollars, whereas the cost of an Avastin injection is in the range of about $70. So it's a an enormous cost savings that is very difficult to ignore. Additionally, it appears that the frequency of administration of the Avastin is somewhere around 6 weeks. So there's a big difference between coming in every 6 weeks and a big difference between coming in every 4 weeks. Now, the decision to inject Avastin or Lucentis should probably be made after a full discussion between each individual patient and each individual physician. But certainly that's sort of the background behind where we're at right now. And this entity that I've been constantly referring to, the National Eye Institute, is most probably going to fund a trial in the very near future comparing Avastin directly with Lucentis and following the patients over a period of time to see which one actually is going to be superior, so that physicians and patients will have a good guide as to which drug to actually use.
So even though it's not FDA approved, it's still okay to, legally okay to, for doctors to use it on patients.
Yes, that's a good question. The FDA has always said it's not in the practice of regulating how physicians practice medicine. And indeed, drugs are very commonly used, not only in ophthalmology, but throughout medicine in general. Drugs are very commonly used in an off-label fashion.
Okay. Well, more callers online to visit with you. Lois in Eau Claire will give you a chance now. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Larry, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is related to a very advanced age and in relation to macular degeneration. My mother is 97, has had the diagnosis for several years. Her vision is to the point where she can't read at all, and she tells me her vision is getting worse. Now, she's been told there was nothing that could be done, and she does have one cataract over one eye. The other one, the cataract, had been removed. Recently, the doctor told her that he could give her better vision in the eye with the cataract, obviously by removing that one.
Sure.
And my question is really, at her age, she is pretty independent, and she is compensating very well. But is there any advantage to pursuing this?
Mm-hmm. I suppose without looking at the person yourself, you can't make a definite recommendation. But what, in general, what would you?
Yeah, correct, Larry. I think I can make a general comment about that. It sounds like your mom is a relatively healthy, well-to-do, just kind of 97-year-old lady who's really got all her faculties about her. So I would probably not let the age get in the way of the decision-making process. So essentially the decision would be, should you remove a cataract in the setting of advanced age-related macular degeneration? And, certainly without looking at your mom, I would say that if the cataract is relatively dense, removal of the cataract in such patients will often lead to a much improved quality of life. Now, mm-hmm. Your mom probably won't be able to have her central visual acuity to write checks, to read a newspaper. She may never have the ability to recognize the details on a person's face again because she's lost the central visual acuity from the macular degeneration. However, removal of the cataract, especially if it's relatively dense, will give her a lot better peripheral vision. She may be able to move around a lot easier. Colors will seem to be brighter, and it may actually help improve her quality of life. But again, this is something that you should probably have a full discussion with your individual physician.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Lois, for calling.
And thank you.
And John in Portage, it's your turn next. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to know if you could explain the relationship between vision loss and erectile dysfunction drugs. I'll hang up and listen on the air.
Mm-hmm. It's been shown that certain of the ED drugs can interfere with some of the electrical pathways in the retina. So some people can get varying visual phenomenon. And there are certain clinical trials, one of which we're participating at the University of Wisconsin, to really see if there's any effect on the electrical pathways of the retina when people are on these ED drugs. It's something called an electroretinogram, very similar to an EKG, which looks at the electrical activity of the heart. We can do the same thing with the retina. So there is some evidence perhaps it affects the electrical pathways in the retina, but certainly not enough to take any of these drugs off the market at this point.
Carol in Port Washington, your turn now. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you. I have a question on cataract surgery. I had cataract surgery in one eye 3.5 months ago, and I'm not doing well. I'll give you a little history. I had 3 LASIK procedures on that eye, 2 on the other eye, at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and that was very successful. That was in the late 1990s. It took me from being legally blind into a just visually impaired category, and I functioned very well with bifocal glasses. When I saw that things were declining, I do see my ophthalmologist regularly, we decided to go ahead with cataract surgery. And the IOL, the intraocular lens, was implanted, and I lost distant vision and close vision to the extent that everything is very, very blurry. And what my ophthalmologist says is that I fall into a category of people that take a very long time to heal, and that perhaps the LASIKs change the structure of my eye, although that should not be a cause not to have the surgery. She says my ophthalmologist sees a little edema, not too much. I did have an inflamed retina and maybe still do. I go for a follow-up visit tomorrow. There's no problem with the thin membrane that's located behind the IOL. And so it's blurry vision and decreased acuity, both distance and close vision. And I'm wondering what I might look forward to. Is it something that just is going to take time? I understand there are, quote-unquote, other surgeries that sometimes are done, but I don't know what those others are or if I'd be a candidate for it, and I haven't discussed that yet with my ophthalmologist, and I will do that. But I'd like your opinion.
Yeah, you know, assuming you don't have other retinal pathologies that are causing you to have a decline in vision, some of the more common reasons why a person might have decreased vision following cataract surgery, and one of them you already addressed, which is the capsular opacification. Sometimes following insertion of the intraocular lens or the IOL, you can develop a thin membrane behind the intraocular lens, which instead of looking through clear glass, makes it look as if you're looking through wax paper, and that can generally be addressed with a very quick outpatient laser procedure. And you already addressed that and said that you were told that that wasn't the problem. So one of the other more common reasons why you might have vision loss following cataract surgery is something called cystoid macular edema. What that actually means is that you've developed a swelling or an inflammation in the retina. And sometimes that can take a long time to go away. We can treat it with eye drops. Sometimes we treat it with injections of steroids behind the eyeball. But sometimes it can take quite a lengthy period of time, sometimes 3 months, sometimes 6 months before it all resolves.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Joe in Wausau next. Joe, hello to you.
Hello. You mentioned the cold laser, and it seems like that would target the specific problem blood vessel. But the two drugs, Avastin and Lucentis, seem like they would affect all the blood vessels in the retina. How do you keep it from destroying everything?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There's a lot of different ways to answer that. The easiest way to think about that is that, okay, what's happening when we inject Avastin and Lucentis is that these drugs target a specific molecule. They don't target blood vessels. They target a molecule called VEGF, or something called vascular endothelial growth factor. And as the name suggests, this molecule causes blood vessels to grow. So we have normal blood vessels in the retina, which aren't highly dependent on VEGF because they're already in existence. So normal blood vessels aren't affected that much if the eye is exposed to Avastin or Lucentis. Whereas blood vessels that are just recently growing from the disease process are highly dependent on their survival on vascular endothelial growth factor. So when we give a patient Avastin or Lucentis, it actually targets the vascular endothelial growth factor, and that's what these abnormal blood vessels need to stay alive, so to speak. So if we can get rid of the vascular endothelial growth factor, it essentially turns off the or destroys the abnormal blood vessels but leaves the normal blood vessels intact.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Matt in Elma, it's your turn. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you. I was diagnosed about a year and a half ago with keratocoma, and I'm 32, and I do a lot of outdoor activities and do woodworking, and it seems like my one eye is getting progressively worse. I'm just wondering what some of the options might be for to take care of the vision problem.
Yeah, it sounds as if the entity you're talking about is something called keratoconus, which is a thinning of the cornea. It has nothing to do with the retina. It's actually in the front part of the eye, and it can cause severe amounts of myopia or astigmatism. And, in general, what we, you know, the first line of management for that condition would be to use a contact lens. And if that's unacceptable for a variety of reasons, for example, some patients with keratoconus don't tolerate that. Sometimes patients get scarring on the cornea from the keratoconus, which can be exacerbated by the contact lens. You know, patients may sometimes need a transplant of the cornea. And again, this is something that you should discuss with your individual physician.
And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Dr. Ip, there, you've got people work, potential clients for your trials, and maybe you could just go over that once again for us. Talk a little bit about what people might be, how people might be able to be involved.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing to do is, you know, if you think you're a candidate for some of the specific trials that we talked about, which is the SCORE study, if you have a vein occlusion with vision loss, or if you have the early form of macular degeneration, and we didn't really cover that too much, but you know, if you have a if you are diagnosed with drusen or dry macular degeneration, you may be a candidate for enrollment into the AREDS 2 study, which we're doing at the University of Wisconsin. Again, that's a very important trial, looking at certain vitamin supplements for age-related macular degeneration, and it may be something that you wish to speak with your doctor about to see if they think you're eligible for this, and mm-hmm. if they do, then you know, you can certainly be referred appropriately as appropriate for consideration in one of these trials. And I just like to say that, you know, one of the really promising things that we're looking at again are these treatments of Avastin and Lucentis mm-hmm. for wet macular degeneration. The last thing I'd like to say about it really is that you know, for years, the waiting room in a retina specialist's office was a depressing place to be, okay? I mean, you know, we would tell the patients, just come back in a year, and, you know, we just talk to them and ask them how their kids are doing. And now it's a happy place. It's a good spot for all of us to be in now.
Thank you so much for being with us. I look forward to another visit.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Michael Ipps. Ip is Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at the Fundus Photograph Reading Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is chairing a study, a couple of studies, and certainly a pleasure to have him with us today. And we will look forward to another visit from him. I bet you if you went online to Fundus Photograph Reading Center, you'd find some more information about all of the trials and all of the work that's being done there. So go to a search engine and type in Fundus, F-U-N-D-U-S, Photograph Reading Center, University of Wisconsin, and you'll get plenty of information. Coming up, we're going to be talking about canoeing and kayaking and other outdoor adventures, including Canoecopia with Darren Bush. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.